His voice is familiar to most people in the Lower Mainland. He's been on a newsman for years here, but he got his start back in 1963. Calgary.
Mm-hmm.
Campbell McCubbin is with us today.
Hi. In preparation for your visit, I was going back through some old albums, and I didn't realize it, but it was 1962 when I first was on the air out of my parents' house. My good friend Gordon Bibby and I were in high school. We had become enraptured with radio after having a tour of a radio station and seeing a studio. As a matter of fact, it was CFAC. And I looked at the studio there and I went, wow, I could do that. I mean, this looks like fun work. Gordon and I decided to build our own radio station. We're still in high school. So we asked, there was a Popular Mechanics magazine that had a two-tube AM transmitter, build it yourself. I think it was Popular Electronics, actually. So we asked the class geek, Bob, I think it was, if he could build this. And he said, yeah, I could build that for you. So he built for us a two-tube transmitter. It was about a foot long by about 6 inches wide, 6 inches high. We went on the air from my parents' basement every Saturday morning, putting together the whole radio station. He'd bring a turntable to join with my turntable. He'd bring a stack of records to join with my stack of records. We'd plug the whole thing in the microphone into this little transmitter and transmit about 60 feet from the house. So yeah. All my friends would come down and sit in my driveway. Drove my father to distraction while we played CMGB, Cam McCubbin and Gordon Bibby. And our motto was CMGB illegally. I still have it. Look at that. This is microphone, but look at that. Homemade poster for CMGB. $14.90 on your dime. So while I was doing that, I decided that I would like to make a career out of that. I sent letters to every radio station and TV station in Calgary, which was about four or five letters at the time, offering to work for free, dusting records, working and doing whatever. Anything at all that they needed doing, I would come and do for free just to sort of soak up some atmosphere. And I got about four answers back, two of them encouraging, saying, you know, we can't take advantage of your offer to work for free. We don't have anything right now. But CFAC in their letter said, if you'd like to come down do an audition, just to see what you sound like, we'd be happy to have you talk to Mr. Jim Kunkel. And that was a letter from Clarence Mack, which is Hudson Mack's father, as a matter of fact. I jumped at that chance, went running down immediately, and read a bunch of commercials. I mean, it was like heaven for me. And the first experience in a radio station, I don't know if you remember yours, but talk about being 3 feet off the ground. So I did it, and Jim Kunkel was kind enough to say to me, you know, he says, you'll make a better than average announcer someday. We haven't got anything for you right now, but I'll keep you on file. And I said, can I come down and hang out? I can't, you know, you don't want me to work for free, but can I come down and just watch sometimes? He says, yeah, you can come down and do that. So for weeks on end, I went down and hung out in the control room in the evenings with none other than Bill Paul. Bill Paul was the host of Marketplace in his later years on I think, CBC. Bill Paul was an evening disc jockey at that time, so I sat, and eventually he let me operate for him. And, you know, this is a story that I've heard repeated in your interviews so many times. No broadcast schools, but you sneak in the back door, you get somebody, you know, to let you touch the dials and things like that. And that's what I did. And then by 1963, I was a Boy Scout, Queen Scouts. And I was chosen to go to the World Jamboree. One of seven Scouts out of Calgary who went to the World Jamboree in Athens in 1963. When I got back from that, I went to a remote that one of the guys from CFAC was doing. And he said, McCubbin. I said, where have you been? He says, Jim Kunkel's been trying to get hold of you. And I said, why? He says, there's a job coming up. It's a one night a week. The part-time one night, a Saturday night guy is leaving. And, you know, he's trying to get hold of you. Well, I ran. I hopped on my bike and ran down there. I wasn't dressed for the occasion, so I told the receptionist, Lois Crozier, I'm not dressed for this. She looked at me and said, obviously. And but I'd like to make an appointment. She said, all right, when would you like to see Mr. Kunkel? And so I made an appointment for the next day and went home, got dressed properly, and then went down and meet him. So I was lucky enough to get the one night a week, all night show.
What were they playing back?
Back then, it was middle of the road stuff. They hadn't gone to rock. They went to rock the next year, which was, I mean, heaven for a kid like me. I was 17. But they were playing middle of the road stuff. You know, Four Preps, Four Lads, Four whatever. A little Andre Castellanos, Hugo Montenegro, you know, the whole bit. Then, because I got my foot in the door there, I got to do things like that summer, touring the town with Texaco. Big 62 Chevy station wagon painted out in CFAC colors. You know, just doing the roundabout town thing. And then I was lucky enough to do the traffic for the weekends up in the airplane with the Calgary Flying Club, which was great too. I mean, this is all in my first year. I'm in heaven. I'm still trying to finish high school at junior college at Mount Royal College. Then Jack Fox, who did the all-night show at the time, got ill, and I got a raise at the same time from $2 an hour to $3 an hour. This is 1964, I guess it was. just before CFAC went rock. Jack got sick. I got the full-time all-night show, six nights a week. Since I got full-time, I got taken off to $3 an hour and reduced to a monthly salary.
Which worked out to
less than $3 an hour.
Of course.
But who cares? I would have done it free originally. And so I became the host of Craven A Music Till Dawn, which Craven A had sponsored all the way across the country in each market. And I was the host in the Calgary market. So I did that for about a year. And then during that year, of course, we switched to rock and roll, which was heaven. I mean, that was in 1964 when the Beatles and the British Invasion hit. There was 1 week on our survey when 8 out of the 10 top songs were Beatles songs. I mean, that was the era when we also had a basketball team called the CFAC Good Guys. We'd play basketball against women's teams throughout southern Alberta and always lose by 2 points. But after each and during each game, women were screaming, asking to sign their arms. I mean, I was 17. I was turning 18 years old. I mean, I died and gone to heaven.
Yes.
So it was a wonderful time. Then I got moved down from the all-night show to evening, sort of late evening show, and then into full-time production because I was pretty good at commercial work. And so I got a day job, all still at CFAC, doing full-time production.
Who were some of the people you were working with back then?
Oh, you'll know many of them because so many people went through CFAC in those days. Terry David Mulligan was working with us at that time. J. Paul McConnell, Bob Robertson. All of us were CFAC Good Guys at the time. Dennis Corey, who's still involved in the business in a senior capacity on the prairies. Oh, Ned Corrigal, Clarence Mack, Gary Mack, of course, who was Byron McGregor in later life, whose life ended way too soon. But Gary was a young, foolish kid at that time. I'm not sure he ever got over being that. But that was Hudson's brother, as you know. Gosh, who else? There was tons of names. Bernie Barnyard Bishop was on the air at that time. Don Lamb came down with him from CJCA in Edmonton. I don't know if you might have worked with Don Lamb at that time.
No, he was before my time.
Yeah. Don Lamb taught us all how to do rock and roll radio. Okay, kitten, got to get to getting. It's pin pulling time with the Don Lamb goings on.
I remember hearing those, yeah.
Keith Hampshire worked opposite us. Keith Hampshire, he of the singing fame, First Cut is the Deepest, Daytime, Nighttime, Mr. Businessman, all those. Keith was a camera pusher at CFCN Television and doing one night a week on the all-night show at CFCN. In those days, I mean, you were friendly as hell with everybody else who worked opposite you, especially when you're doing the all-night show. There were times when the three of us, Clark Gray over at CKXL, Keith Hampshire at CFCN, and myself, would actually synchronize our radio stations just for something to do because we're bored about 3 o'clock in the morning. And we'd say, okay, we'd time it all. We'd all be on phone together. We'd say, okay, let's roll Doo-Wah Diddy. All together, sync. So somebody pushing buttons at 3 o'clock in the morning in Calgary sometimes could hear three radio stations playing the same thing
at the same time.
But Keith went on, of course, to some huge model, huge pile of fame in Great Britain. He went to Radio Caroline. That was one of the forks in the road I didn't take. He phoned me right after he went there. He says, "We need you." And I was just about to get married. He said, I've told the guy how great you are, da-da-da-da-da, you can come over and you can start tomorrow kind of thing. And I said, you know what? I don't want to start my married life on a boat off Great Britain somewhere.
With a bunch of other guys.
So I didn't. That was a fork I didn't take. I got interested in news basically because that first 3 years at CFAC had all been learning. I'd been switching, doing shifts. I'd been doing everything I could around
production.
The radio station to learn and find, and I'd done a year in production and I started thinking, well, maybe I'd like to do maybe some news or learn some news. There wasn't any opportunity in the radio station to do it, so I started looking in the ads and there was a place, where was it? Swift Current was looking for a news guy and I said to Jim Kunkel, you know, I'm thinking about learning news and there's a job opening in Swift Current. And Jim said, are you kidding? I said, if you want to learn news, you know, let's look and see if there's something in the chain for you to do. Sure enough, that it just happened that CKWX Vancouver, under direction of Neil Nisbet as news director, was looking for a guy. So on Friday night, I faked a newscast, recorded it as an audition, mailed it on Saturday morning. CKWX phoned me on Monday morning. That's how good the mail service was in 1964. That was 1966, and they phoned me Monday morning, and I had just been married. I got married in June of 66. They said, when can you come? And I told them, I can come as soon as you can arrange it with CFAC. It was 9 o'clock in the morning. We were still in bed. It was my one day off, so I was still in bed. And I went to Marilyn and said, how are you going to like living in Vancouver? And she went, what? You know, we're going to Vancouver. We'd spent our honeymoon there. We both loved it. So it was like, here's another dream come true. Because I thought Vancouver at that time was the mecca of radio. I listened to the radio when we were on our honeymoon in June of 66. Heard Fred Latrimo on LG in the afternoon shift. And I'd never heard a better disc jockey for rock and roll. Intelligent, glib, you know, but still mainstream rock and roll disc jockey. I was so impressed with Vancouver radio. Of course, after I got out here, I realized that it's just like any other market. You've got good guys, bad guys, all-night guys that are, you know. Speaking of all-night guys, at that time, one thing that impressed me about CKWX and I thought was such a great thing that I was going to was that their all-night guy had been the all-night guy. It was Nick Sands since about 1959. He'd been on the all-night show for 7 or 8 years or 9 years. I'm thinking, whoa, what a market this is when you keep your all-night guy that long, because heck, you know, Calgary, you do it for a year and then you move on to something else. So that was the big adventure. I didn't even have a day off. I sort of arranged to sent Marilyn out because I had to work at CFAC and she had to look for an apartment. At that point, there was zero vacancy in Vancouver in 1966. I mean, none. But we've met. She somehow didn't even know where the radio station was, but found us an apartment a block and a half from it on Burnaby Street. I was listening to Ross Crane on your interview with him, and he said he had an apartment, same about a block farther down on Burnaby Street there, because the radio station, 1275 Burrard Street.
Which is now a condo.
Which is gone. I have, I'll show you upstairs, but I do have one of the on-air signs. There were six of them saved.
Really?
I have one of them. It's on my the outside of my upstairs bathroom. So when the light's on in the bathroom, the on-air sign comes on. I was just, but speaking of that palace of CKWX on Burrard Street there, I was lucky enough to work in three radio stations. The three main ones that I worked in were custom-made radio station buildings. CFAC at 1301 17th Avenue Southwest was a great little building built for radio, and you know, I have such fabulous memories of that. Then 1275 Burrard was billed, even when I got there, as Canada's most beautiful radio building. Mm-hmm. On all their envelopes, that's what it said.
Excellent building.
And it was 10 years old when I came there. Sparks Halstead, who was part owner, I think, at one point of CKWX, was still hanging around the building doing the gardening. You know, if you remember those planters that were across the front of the building. Sparks was there and fixing tiles in the main hallways. I was warned that my first day at CKWX, you see that old gray-haired guy down there in the far corner fixing that tile? Yeah. Treat him nicely, because that's the former owner. Still has a big pull in this building. Sparks Halstead. Okay. So I called him Mr. Halstead. A very nice guy. Who's Bill Spears was a manager at that time. Bill wasn't exactly a hands-on manager. A nice, great guy, and a great manager for all I know. What did I know about management back then? He used to come into the newsroom about once a week, saunter around behind the tape recorders and down to where the typewriters were. Just look at you with that sort of snaky grin, you know, no teeth showing. Nod his head, turn around, and walk out. That's all.
Obviously, he never understood what was going on in there.
He didn't, yeah. But he just wanted to make sure that he was on top of things. So it was a huge experience for me coming from a rock and roll station.
And who was in the newsroom at that time?
Oh, man, that's where I'm going. It was an incredible newsroom. Mike Titherly was doing feature newscasts. He was former editor of the Vancouver Times. Bearded, I don't know if you know Mike, but a great character, a British tabloid experience. So he taught me an awful lot about news and the color of news, you know. He was always a colorful guy. Rex Ellis, who went on to work for ABC and others, was there. Cameron Bell was there doing morning news, who went a million other places. Not the least of which is Chan. Maury Gwynn, who came from NW to us. Oh, Bill Hutton, not immediately, but Bill Hutton, who was former CFRB news director, became news director, my news director, one of my favorite people, whom I replaced later on in the Ottawa News Bureau, where we're getting ahead of myself there. Doug Taylor. Oh, Neil Nisbet, of course, I told you about the news director. Doug Taylor, interesting guy. Mike Halloran, who worked for the CBC, and another guy like Bill Paul who went on to the CBC. Jim Morrison. Brian Brenn, who's now at CKWX, was at CKWX on a sort of part-time basis back then. That was back in the days of the UBC Radio Society, where a lot of guys came out of, as you found out. And Walt Rutherford later on became news director as well, came down from CJCA as well. So a real good mix of really good news people.
Selkirk had a lot of great people working at their stations.
Yeah, and Selkirk was a family-owned for the most part.
And treated staff like family.
Yeah, they really did. Stuart Mackay was the president of Selkirk. He was the man. And he came in one day, you know, and would personally sit down and say, you know, Cam, you know, you've got a great future in this business. You have to slow down, though. Just slow it down a little bit. Okay. All right. Yes, sir. I will do.
And Bill Hutton used to visit when he was running the Parliamentary Bureau.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, Bill Hutton, it was called the Selkirk News Bureau, and he opened that, as a matter of fact. I'm sure it was opened more as a gateway to the CRTC than anything else. Although its intent was excellent. Its intent was to cover the goings-on of the Western Canadian MPs and cabinet ministers, and focus entirely on what's going on in the West, not to duplicate what broadcast news was doing. So that was an interesting, well, again, we're getting ahead of it, but that's where I went after that, and that's where Hatton came from, and that's where I followed him to, because he went on from there to London Broadcasting and set up another operation for Selkirk, which was great.
We're at WX. You're working in the newsroom.
That's right.
And we're working in the newsroom.
Yeah, I started working evenings as, I was learning the ropes. Then at about the same time, I was also doing a syndicated show for the United Church of Canada with Jim Morrison that was called Dateline. And it ran on about, 20 or 30 stations in Western Canada. A half-hour weekly magazine kind of show that had an edge to it, which was kind of fun. Then I got moved down to evenings for a quick, then down to afternoons, 11 to 6, and then mornings, all within the space of about a year, I ended up doing mornings. I asked Maury Gwynn, because who was leaving the morning, I was replacing Maury because he was going over to Victoria at the time, and I said, Maury, you got any advice for me doing mornings? It's the first time I've done mornings. He says, no, just one thing. He says, don't take any shit from Ellis. Because Rex Ellis was a bit of a gruff character, and pussycat like many are behind, but he was up front, a lot of bluster in that, and that was Maury Gwynn's advice to me, don't take any shit from Ellis. So I held to that and held my own. Stayed on mornings, begged off mornings a couple of times, because I was still so young, I thought that I could add 4 hours and 4 hours and get 8 hours, get a nap in the afternoon, go out at night and come, it didn't work. So I said, can I get back on that cushy 11 to 6 shift? Go out at night and get up in the morning and not have to get up too early. But anyway, they kept pushing me back. I did the beat for probably a couple of years, at a time when beat reporting in Vancouver was the most competitive, I think. But those are the days we'd cover every bank robbery. Now you don't even know there are bank robberies because they're everyday occurrence, and unless somebody gets killed, nobody goes to them. It's just another ho-hum story. But back then, a bank robbery would happen. There would be 4 or 5 news cruisers out front of the bank. Everybody waiting till they open the doors of the bank so the cops would come out, and we say, how much did they get, and what did they look like, and what did we do? So it was very competitive. I covered the cop shop and the deputies conference, etc., for about a year, and then covered City Hall for about a year. So all, on the roll towards becoming an experienced, rounded person. I don't think I have. Back in those days as well at WX, not only did they have a great newsroom, but they were also a half-talk station. I say half-talk because they played mornings. Like John Barton was doing doing music in the mornings. But Bob Bye and Jim McDonald had a talk show in the mornings. Barry Clark, who went on to become the Rentalsman and cabinet minister, and I think he's retired in Kelowna.
Kelowna,
yeah. But Barry had his own show at that time as well. And who else? They had a guy. Oh, Judy LaMarche, of course. They had her own talk show for a year. She used to bring cookies in. She was a great baker. She had a selection of cookbooks like nobody has ever seen. She had cookbooks, shelves and shelves of them. Again, there's another example of a person who is on the outside, gruff and rough exterior, and on the inside, just a sweetie.
Sorry.
Many are like that, like Roy Jacks, too. And there's another fellow that was there at WX.
They'd treat you like crap, but if something happened, they'd be your best friend.
Exactly.
And help you out.
Exactly. So a ton of great people and great experiences and great learning. So that was up to 73. At that point, Bill Hutton had been news director, and I was working for Bill at WX, and then he went to set up the Selkirk News Bureau. Took over from Sam Ross and Cliff Cowan. Those were the two reporters in the Ottawa Radio News Bureau, as it was known then. It was changed under Bill's direction to the Selkirk Radio News Bureau. He had operated it and kept a very close eye on what the CRTC was doing during his operation, and raised a lot of glasses with people that were important to that. Then he was going to Great Britain because Great Britain was going to open up private radio, and he was going to help Selkirk, who had a stake in London Broadcasting, which was going to be a 24-hour news station at the time. And so he was inviting all the news directors, and I wasn't news director at that time, but he was inviting all the news directors down to the bureau to show them Ottawa and Parliament Hill and get their advice as to what he should do. And he invited Walt Rutherford, and Walt didn't want to go. He said he'd been to Ottawa and he knew the route. So he said, do you want to go? And I said, yeah, sure, I'll go. So down I went to Ottawa for a couple of days, 3 or 4 days, whatever the tour was. Had my eyes open there about Parliament Hill and everything that was going on. Wasn't very impressed with covering a bunch of, being a scrum. And Bill, so I said, you're going to London? He said, yes. So he said, I'm looking for somebody to replace me. And I said, well, what kind of person you got in mind? Maybe I can think of somebody for you. And he said, well, how about you? And then I had to, oh my God, now I'm going to have to think about that. And within 2 or 3 weeks, Bill came to town, and I was the guy. So I had just bought a house in Cloverdale, We had just moved into it. 10 days later from moving day, we were living in Ottawa. I phoned my wife and said, stop unpacking. We're going to Ottawa. So off we went to Ottawa. And that was a two-year stint covering Parliament Hill for the Western stations, like I mentioned. Doug Taylor, who had worked with me at WX, had been working for Bill. He helped me a lot there. And then he left, and I hired Ron Robert from Calgary, from CFAC, who had, at that time, a great deal of experience in the oil business. That was during the days of Let the Eastern Bastards Freeze in the Dark, and Trudeau giving the finger to the Western farmers and what have you, and I thought Ron would be really helpful there. So he joined me there, and shortly after that, my longstanding secretary, Ann Sarsfield, left to go to a great job in Toronto. So I needed somebody to do a little bit of secretarial work, but the truth be told, there wasn't a lot to do. So I needed somebody who could do that and maybe wanted to learn the news business. I posted the ad. I got two responses, one from somebody who didn't really want to come from Victoria, I think it was, and one from a woman who worked for All Canada as a secretary in Toronto, by name of Tanta Gupta. So Tanta replied to the ad and thought it sounded like a challenge. And I flew her up from Toronto to show her what it would be all about. And I was pretty impressed with her. She's very intelligent. So I said, okay, come on up. And that's where Tanta got her start on the air. She replaced me as a bureau chief when I left Ottawa and went back to Vancouver. When I left as news director in Vancouver, she replaced me as news director in Vancouver, and now Tanta Gupta is a vice president, I think, of Rogers.
Communications for Rogers.
Yeah. So Tanta done very, very well. So that was Ottawa. I had my highest highs and lowest lows in Ottawa, I think, for 2 years. I liked, I did the tourist thing for 2 years. Canoed on the canal, went up in the Gatineaus, went to every national this, that, and the other thing. Loved all that bit. Parliament Hill itself was, it's a zoo. You got to be a certain personality type to love that. And the fear is that you get stuck in Ottawa. I think a lot of people have over the years, and they think that Ottawa is the center of the universe. But that was a great time in Ottawa, too, because that was 19...
There were personalities still there in 75. Parliament. Well, now we've got a bunch of...
Trudeau was prime minister. Jean Marchand was his transport minister.
Chrétien was there.
Jean Chrétien was there. I had many a breakfast with Jean Chrétien. He was telling me how he learned how to speak with talking with the English boys, you know. He is a great guy. On the other side, I mean, Tommy Douglas was still there. John Diefenbaker was still there.
Great orators,
Robert
great
Stanfield.
Speakers.
Yeah.
People who actually had something to say and knew how to say it.
Tommy Douglas, Tommy Douglas was my guest at the press gallery dinner. And what a gentleman. He was my favorite on the entire Hill. If he had not been an NDP, he would have been prime minister for as long as he wanted to be. If he'd been a liberal or conservative, he would have swept the country. So that was a great, you know, some of the highs, some of the lows in Ottawa. It's a pretty city and a nice place
it's
to visit
pretty,
to
yeah.
see where all your tax dollars
two
went.
Two days would be good. After that,
that's
leave.
Right. You know. Yeah, so I spent two long years. Then Bill announced he was coming back because everything had been set up in London. I should think about what I wanted to do now. So my immediate thought was to go back to the coast and maybe be a news director because I'd learned a lot doing that. I was actually offered a job in sales at All Canada. I think I was being groomed for the upper reaches of Selkirk at the time.
Later.
But yeah, the offer actually would have been with All Canada in Montreal at the sales end of it. And I said, sales? You know, I said, oh, you'd be good at it. No, I don't think so.
Yeah.
Well, you wouldn't have to stay there long, just maybe a year. I want to go back. So I was given a choice of, list your top three, what you want. I said, okay, I want to go to WX. I want to go to CJOC, as a matter of fact, because they had a television station there. And I thought, I could learn TV. And the third one, I can't remember what, I think it was Victoria. Same reason. So I got WX, and back I came to WX, and within 3 months of that, made news director. That was a challenge, because at that time, we had, including stringers, part-timers, we had 35 people in the newsroom.
Who was there at that time when you came back as news director?
Well,
35 people is a lot to remember, but who were some of the...
Well, my favorite was Roy Morton, who I worked with in the mornings. We were desk side-by-side deskers. He is Dr. Roy Morton now. He had a voice that made me sound like a boy soprano. Roy was, good morning, Roy Morton. Young kid, skinny as a rail. And he, just when I took over as news director, we'd worked together and just enjoyed the heck out of each other. He felt really bad because the announcement was made about me being news director, and he walked in within 15 minutes with his resignation. And he said, this isn't what it looks like, he said, but it's the timing's terrible. But my wife just graduated, and we made a promise that when she finished putting, you know, when I finished putting her through university, then it was my turn to go to university, and she would work. And I'm going. I'm signing up for either law or medicine. Turned out to be medicine, and Roy went on to, he's the head of something, specializing in anesthesia, I think, at Royal Columbian. So yeah, Roy was my favorite. We had Bill Roger, John Sterling, who went by the nickname of Newfie, David Cassidy, who's still around. He's down here in South Surrey, somebody. That might be somebody else you might like to talk to. David Cassidy. Beautiful mellow tones, a broadcaster out of San Francisco, nicest guy in the world you'd ever want to talk to. John Kendrick, who is very active on Radio West and other boards. John was in and out doing stringer work and then doing some beat work with us, etc. Tyler Scott, you remember Tyler Scott? Her real name is Laverne Prosick, and she was one of the first female news people in this town. It's hard to believe that there weren't, you know, with the preponderance of females on the air now, it's hard to believe that there was a time when there were hardly any, if they weren't doing homemakers.
Or none.
Yeah, well, if they're doing a homemaker show or something like that, like Neighbor Nina or you know, something, then women were on the air, but there were very few at the time. And Tyler, Laverne, Red Robinson was still back doing mornings at WX during that period. I was working with Red, and then Tom Peacock, and Tom and I worked together, both of whom went on to other things, one of whom is sadly no longer with us. And then, of course, Roy Jacks. We managed to hire Roy away from CJJC in Langley, where he was, I thought, stagnating. I mean, from my standpoint, sitting at WX and looking at Roy Jacks, this fabulous broadcaster with a great mind and wonderful, quirky personality, doing a morning news in Langley at the time, I thought, what a waste. And I decided, after 2 years of being news director, that I wanted no more part of this running what I thought of as a, it was like running a kindergarten. And it was a 24-hour day job. You get phone calls at night and day. You just get home, sit down to dinner, and somebody's phoning you, asking you to do this. And somebody else would come in and say, I can't work with so-and-so. So I decided I just want to go back on the air, do the morning run. And I told Tom that. And he said, well, you know, what do you think we need then? And I said, well, I think what you need right now is an asshole. Somebody to kick butt, you know, because I'm just not a butt kicker. I said, how about Roy Jacks? And he said, yeah, I think that'd be good. It took us a bit to convince him, but he said, yeah, okay, I'll do it. And then he took over, and he and I always had a great relationship. I just loved the guy, you know. He had a nickname for everybody. I was the dog master because I had 3 Afghan hounds and went dog showing all the time. So, dog master. Yeah, that was Roy. But Bob Bai was he was still the program manager, I think, at that point. He had left doing the open line show, and that was all done. Dalt Helton was the general manager. I don't know if you worked with Roy or with Dalt.
No, I missed him by a couple of years.
That guy
yeah,
was.
I met him once at another Selkirk function. But
yeah. Dalt was just a prince of a man. He was very much involved in operetta and singing, and he brought Peg Miller down from CJCA. And she's still up there and kicking up her heels. And in Edmonton, I keep seeing her name show up. And between the two of them, they changed the face of CKWX, you know. The radio station brought back Bonnie and Clyde, the movie, for a second run. We sponsored it. And to promote the movie, we hired a bunch of old cars from the 20s, all beautiful old cars. And everybody got dressed up on, you know, with machine guns and all this kind of stuff and drove around the town. To announce the promotion to staff, Dalt gave everybody a big brown envelope with a gun in it. And it was a water pistol, but a big water pistol. Black. Well, for the next 2 weeks, you were not safe in that building. Here's Dalt in a $3,000 suit, crawling on his hands and knees. I still have this image in my mind. Crawling on his hands and knees down the hallway at WX, trying to catch Jim Morrison and me, Jim on one side tucked into an alcove in the accounting office, and me around the corner of the square with our guns at the ready. And he thinks he's just going to get me because he saw me duck in behind, but he doesn't know Jim Morrison is in the accounting office with his gun. So Dalt ends up on his hands and knees being soaked from both ends. Now he'd call you, he'd walk by his office, Cam, can you come in here a minute? And you'd poke your head in. That's the kind of guy Dalt was, and he was just wonderful, and he had a heart of gold. Guys that he should have fired, he never did, or else he did and then took them back. He was a wonderful manager, great fun, and put that radio station on the map for a lot of different reasons back then in that era. So it was sad to see him go, and I missed his funeral, and that's one I'm really sad that I missed, because I heard it was wonderful. It would have done Dalt proud.
Probably more a wake than a funeral.
It was, from all reports, just fabulous, you know. The Elton boys were there, and they're all singing, and they'd written songs for it. That would have been wonderful. Where does that take us to?
77 was when the next occurrence came, and
That was when I basically stepped down as news director and just went back to straight doing morning news. I think it was Tom at the time. It was still Red at that time, I think. But coming up to 1980, CKWX had applied for an FM license and managed to get one with the promise of playing 24-hour-a-day jazz, serious jazz. Got the license for CJAZ, CJAZ. Their plan was to have a morning show, which was basically talk, because the foreground content requirements were so steep. So we had a four-hour morning show. Then the rest was music, and then some features called Word Jazz. Word Jazz. Now you has C-Jazz. So it was coming up and coming up and coming up. I knew that they wanted somebody to do that morning show, but I wanted them to come and ask me. It seems so silly now. Yeah. So finally, Tom Peacock came to me, and I hadn't made any move at all, and he said, don't you want to work on the news station? I said, well, yeah. He said, well, you haven't applied. I said, well, I was hoping you'd come and ask me. He said, well, you don't need that. So that it was at that point that I accepted the role of the co-host on a program called This AM on FM.
And who was your...
Julie Marcus, who was an interesting, ballsy lady, who is still in the... I think she's still in the publishing game locally here. She was working for a BC Business or something like that. Julie just bullied her way into that job. We were doing sort of auditions, you know, who's going to be a good fit for Cam, and there were people coming through, you know, 4 or 5 a week. Julie just kept coming in, kept hanging out, wouldn't leave. You know, finally I went, all right, yeah, I think it's Julie. Yeah, I think it's going to be Julie. So that was a really, really interesting experience. Man, we had a team of 6 people producing 4 hours of fresh information content with no phone in, no talk show every morning. Half of them were pre-taped and half of them were live, so you could react to what was going on that morning. You used most of them by phone if you couldn't get someone in. The studio was amazing as well. It was built in the garage downstairs at 1275 Burrard Street. There was a big lunchroom down there that back in the old days people had used, that had its own facilities and everything, but they cleaned out the lunchroom and made it into beautiful studios. I've got some photographs somewhere. Angled cedar walls and a unique concept for our show. We had 2 couch living room chairs, a big U-shaped control panel control panel on the far end of the room, but the other end was these two chairs and plants, and you know, like a living room. And we ran, or initially we rang with lav mics to make it even more comfortable. The lav mics was an experiment that didn't really work. We went back to a sort of long mic, but it was an amazing time because that team of 6 people cranked out so much information. Ken Lundgren was the director of spoken word. Director of spoken word. That's a great title. So we did that, and we'd do the show from, I think it was 6 till 10 or 5 till 9, and then we'd have a quick break, and then we'd have our interviews lined up, and then we had usually 5 or 6 interviews in half hour blocks until about noon the next day, or to put in the bank. So it was a pile of work. Rob Croston was the operator and editor for the show. He now has his own company called Word Noise. I think he got that from Word Jazz. So Word Noise. Terrible name. Sorry, Rob. But he did that. Harry Boone was the who also came down from CJCA. Do you see a trend here? And so Harry Boone was the program. No, so he was the manager actually of CJAZ. That was an interesting experiment, but the engineering was where its Achilles heel was. To save money, they shared CKVU's television stick on Salt Spring Island. It came in beautifully in Victoria. You couldn't hear it in the West End. This is a jazz station that you can't hear in the West End, and you can't hear in most of the downtown area of Vancouver. And they fought that and never changed it until finally, you know, they had to make a change, and it became Kiss FM. I was there. I left after a year because my wife and I opened a business called, it was a part of the Good Stuff Games chain. I kept saying to Marilyn, we opened in October of 80. I kept saying to Marilyn, can I quit now? Because CJAZ wasn't going to be going anywhere. And finally, just after Christmas, you know, in the retail business, that's a great time to quit your other job. So that's what we did. And I was out of radio, with the exception of the odd little part-time thing, for about 4 years after that.
What lured you back?
A big pile of money. Oh, one more thing, though. Back in CJAZ day, one of the things that I did do was I was one of the first people in probably Canada to have a one-on-one interview with the Dalai Lama in his suite at the Hotel Vancouver. I had no idea what to say to the guy. And back then, he was even less of a wordsmith than he is now, and huge gaps. It was a huge editing chore, though. We were tempted to edit it just to take the gaps out of it, but we thought, no, that'd be sacrilege. I asked him, do you ever have any fun? And he went, fun? Yeah, I mean, do you play games? He said, well, I did want to, at one time, wanted to learn how to play chess. Chess? Yes, but chess is a war game. And then he went on to a beautiful line, which I can't even try to quote here, though, but about the relationship of chess to war, to life, etc. And I went, whoa, starting to see why this guy might be the Dalai Lama. So that was a little look back there at that.
You got lured back to the business by a big pile of money. Offered you the big pile of money?
It was back at CKWX again. They were going with a new morning show, and they were putting together a morning team, which consisted of Jim Fraser, who came over from Nanaimo, myself, Gloria Makarenko, although she was not the first traffic woman there. I'm trying to think of, she'll never forgive me. Kay, that was her name, Kay. Kay, and her father was high up in hockey. Phil Reimer, as I say. Greg Douglas, Dr. Sport, and a guy called Steve Ivings, who was our comedian guy. He was a great impersonator. He could do Sean Connery and all these other people, etc., and he was fabulous. So we had this six-person team that they were putting together, and basically that's, you know, at the time, it was in 1984. We'd just gone through that early 80s recession. Our store had been doing wonderful, but for 2 years, the last 2 years, 83 and 84, had been, oh, man, it's tough here. So we decided at that time to sell the store. We were thinking about selling the store anyway when the wheelbarrow came and went, hey, you got to come back here.
That's a huge morning show.
Yeah, yeah. And well produced and a lot of fun. And we did a dream sequence every morning called What If. Gene Kern voiced the intro to it with a glissando harp that was a transition from reality to, and it was, now we escape from reality with the WX 1130 morning crew. What if, and you can hear this glissando harp going, what if the morning crew went to, you know, Jamaica? And then there would be this little 2 minute bit with, we're in Jamaica, or what if they lived together, and, you know, and all the personalities of the individuals would show up over breakfast. And we created that basically for the reason that it created the impression that we actually did hang out together as a team, and that we were almost living together, and it worked very well. Somewhere somebody has got most of those what ifs, as what they're called. I'd love to hear them again. So for there, gosh, that just sort of went on peacefully. I was doing morning news run. Jack Marion had come over and was sitting opposite me doing Kiss FM's morning news run. And then we were both contributing during that time period to Kiss FM's Today in Vancouver with Julie Brown. Continued to do a whole pile of interviews, which is nice, and do a whole pile of fun feature stuff for Today in Vancouver, which was the foreground content for the FM side of Kiss. So that was a great deal of interesting stuff, aside from just doing the morning show or the morning news run. The beauty of this career has been, for the most part, that on any given day you can phone someone up and say, I want to go fly in a helicopter and do a little feature on that. Say, sure, come on out. I want to try a balloon. Yeah, sure.
Or go bungee jumping.
I want to go on a submarine. Okay. I mean, what a job. It was so much fun. I'm now fully retired except for some voice work out of the spare bedroom. And that's actually amazing, another story in itself. But I was, for about 8 months, since I left radio, not of my own volition, just due to the economy and, you know, the general downslide, I was the lead of the downslide. I worked at Future Shop. They opened a new Future Shop here in White Rock in their home theater department. I went over there because I thought, I got a great home theater upstairs. I know all about it, and I'm good with people. And what the heck? Nobody else wants to hire me. I'll just go do that for a while. Turns out they're 8-hour days. And Marilyn, people used to say to Marilyn, how's Cam like the new job? And she said, well, you know, Cam's never really worked a full 8-hour day in his life. So, I gave that up after Christmas. But I'm getting ahead of myself. Yeah.
We're back at WX.
So
that was a 10-year run, 84 to 94.
It was a great run. I had a great time. We went to Nashville. I went 4 times, but the whole team went 3 times to Nashville during Country Music Week every year. Took 100 listeners with us. Broadcast by satellite the entire morning show before you could do it on the internet. This is by satellite, and hugely expensive. We gave away 100 seats and then sold seats as well for this. Booked the whole hotel, the huge, beautiful hotel, and did the show from the lobby. And all our guests came down and were a live audience for the show. And, you know, I interviewed Garth Brooks when he was just a puppy, came through. And all of them, Clint Black, you know, you name it, we did them all, and they all came down for the breakfast show to be shipped back to Vancouver. So that was a great experience, too. Traveling with Jim Fraser. I know what he looks like in his underwear, and it's not pretty. But yeah, Greg Douglas, we all came down. We did the news from down there. Greg did his sports from down there, where he faxed it all down. We had somebody in the newsroom to do all that. And it was a tremendous, you know, we had six microphones running by remote. Pretty amazing. But eventually CKWX and Country, you know, JR had come online. Come on the air, and immediately had an impact on the country market. Over the years, WX would lose ground to JR and others, and eventually they gave up country. They were giving up country music, and WX was. They all but shut down CKWX, in fact. The cutbacks and their rollbacks began in the fives and tens, and then, you know, people were going out the door in numbers like...
Was it still owned by Selkirk?
Oh, no. By that time, of course, it was rot. And so eventually, I was the last one out the door. And they actually offered me... There were three people there. Three people left on the WX side. Truthfully, that's all there was. Not just on the air. Everywhere. They offered me to do the morning show for...
Doing what?
Well, yeah. I think it was going to be for 6 months or something until they figured out what they were going to do with the radio station. My wife, she said, tell them to abuse somebody else. So, yeah, I said, no, that's fine. I'll just take the package and talk to you later. So it was a pretty decent package. I've got to admit that. And I really didn't do much. My wife and I worked on a book. About 14 months later of not having to do anything, WX finally decided it was going to be a news station. So they were looking for news people. So my severance is starting to run out, and I thought, okay, well, maybe that might be something good. So I went back and talked to them. Oh, I said, give me the weekend to think about it, because I happened to know at the same time that JR was losing because of the same problem. JR was losing Tom Mark and several others. So their newsroom had been decimated, or was being decimated. So I said, let's just wait and see what happens here. And sure enough, JR called me, and I went in and talked to them the following Monday. And it was a great decision. I would far rather be, you know, nothing against CKWX and what it had become, but the 24-hour news clock, to me, is just not fun. I'm the kind of guy who likes a bit more than just doing the straight news and having some fun on the air. And it just, the timing, as everything in my career has been, worked out to be almost perfect. And that's when I started a 13-year run as, quote, news director, two other people.
Good long run.
At JRFM, absolutely, yeah. And so that was really technically the only the second company I'd ever worked for. But, you know, despite moving around, it was all with one company, and then it was taken over by another company. So,
as they all have been.
Yeah, exactly. So at JR, it was a wonderful gig. I mean, we were doing 600 AM. Well, at first when I went there, the AM station was Christian Pop, I think. CKBD was The Bridge, that's right. Dale Wolf, I think, was doing mornings, who's now over at QM, I think. We sort of swapped back and forth, Jack Marion and me. I figured it would sound at least like we had some staff if we alternated newscasts on both stations.
You went through a few morning men, though.
Yeah, well, Jimmy was there. When Jim Fraser was there by that time, he had moved on and gone to JR. And then after that, well, actually on CKBD, it was the last job. Rick Honey had come over from wherever, I don't know if he was, yeah, he'd been at NW, but I'm not sure if he went from NW to us, but anyway, he was doing the morning show until the day before he died. Losing weight, he had cancer, and I couldn't believe it. He had tears in his eyes because they had to take him away from the job the Friday morning, and he had dragged himself out of bed to come in. And
one of the guys who was married to the job.
Yeah, and, absolutely. And he loved it. And then Tom Jeffries took over for him there. Did a great job. I mean, the morning of the replacement, as a matter of fact, they did sort of a tribute to Rick, and Tom was thrown into the lurch to do it all, and he did a masterful job of that. He's a real gentleman, Tom.
Yes, he is.
And then I never did hear the full story, but he sort of stormed out one day, never to return. I'm not sure what it was. I think it was because he felt they were looking for somebody else, and they'd been talking to other people, and he felt it was behind his back, whatever. That's his story to tell, not mine. But on the other side, we had Greg Douglas back again. So it was like old home week, and then Jack Marion, I had a chance to bring Jack Marion over there, and here's Jack and me sitting, I'm on the left, and he's on the right, and It was like Old Home Week for 13 years. It was
this wonderful. Went on until 2008 when all of a sudden AM 600 goes dark.
They got
comes the FM.
Yeah, they got an FM license for AAA, Adult Alternative Album. So what they had basically was too many senior news guys. And Jack, they looked, to their credit, really, they explored every alternative. They offered Jack and me job sharing, and you know, they were wringing their hands trying to figure out what to do because they didn't want to let go anybody. And eventually, it just ended up, I got the flip of the coin. And so again, they were very kind, Jerry, as I mentioned at the time, Jerry Siemens, the manager there, he was almost in tears, but he was great. So I thought, okay, I'm out of here. Within a month, I realized I don't think there's going to be an opportunity ever again to work in radio. And people were there was any news about radio was bad. It was all people being laid off, and so there weren't going to be any openings. So I figured, okay, I'll find something else to do for a year. And that's when Future Shop came up, and I thought, yeah, it's only 8 minutes from home. Can be kind of fun. I'll go do that.
Highlight of your career, your favorite moment.
I mentioned the Dalai Lama, and certainly other people would look at you and say, well, that must have been a highlight. And it was. It was nerve-wracking. But it was a privilege to be able to do that. Now he's pretty much available to just about everybody. But back then, it was like the inner sanctum you had to go in. And the whole crew came down with me, and I'm wearing my suit and tie and got my notes prepared, and so that was interesting. I think I mentioned earlier, though, taking Tommy Douglas to the press gallery dinner, to have rubbed shoulders like that on a friendly basis with the man voted the most famous Canadian or the best Canadian or whatever the CBC series was, Canada's top Canadian, whatever, I can't remember. But it was deserved, that accolade. I think that would be definitely a highlight. But for the fun.
Favorite radio station, favorite time?
CFAC 1964. Girls signing my arm, screaming when I introduced the zombies. Marilyn, did you hear that? They're screaming for me. Yeah, it was. For a kid of 17, it was like heaven.
Does Cam McCubbin listen to any radio anymore?
Seldom. I listen when I'm in the car, and usually it's WX. I think you get this answer from a lot of guys, simply because you just want to keep in touch with what's going on. I normally listen to talk radio. If it's music, I'm listening on my iPod or I'm listening whatever, like a lot of people these days, and that's what the scary part is about the future of radio. But
does commercial radio have a future in your mind, unless it makes some changes?
It has survived to this point, and it's been written off in the past and has survived.
Well, when television arrived, it was written off.
I was just thinking, though, that I was really lucky, and you too, to have lived from one end of a radio era one end of a radio era to another. When I first started back in 1963, the radio station still had an organ and a piano. It was a holdover from the 40s and 50s.
Big old studio.
Exactly, and it still had door opening and closing machines that you could, open up the props and a thunder
thing. The sound effects.
Yeah, all that stuff was still in there. Yep. Even when I went to CKWX in 1966, they had a big organ. Barry Clark used to go in there and play that big organ to unstress himself, and a piano. So that was the transition time then. And when I left, it really is transitioning now to trying to find where it's going. And who knows where it's going to go. But all I know is that the era I worked in is over. It's over. And the age of personality radio, other than some morning shows, is gone.
It's long gone.
So, I'm not going to be jumping in on the bandwagon about how bad everything is, because Lord knows there's enough people saying that. But it's going to be interesting to see where it does go now, because it's probably going to have to do something. Convergence, I think, is going to be the key word. Everything's coming together. It's all, you can't buy a phone without a camera. You can't buy a phone without a computer internet access. You can't buy, it'll soon be, you can't buy anything that isn't a TV, a radio, a computer, and everything all together. So somehow it'll fit in that convergence mix, I'm sure. It'll survive.
Campbell McCubbin, thank you very much for this beautiful afternoon overlooking the ocean in White Rock.
Semiamu Bay, right there.